WFYI podcast brought to you by Bloomington, Indiana, an American college town offering food and drink, college sports, outdoor activities, live music, cool art, and good times daily. Everyone is welcome in Bloomington. More information at visitbloomington.com.
A national abortion ban proposed in the U.S. Senate. Diego Morales dodges a debate, plus another state lawmaker on an Oath Keepers list, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 16th, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, South Carolina Republican U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham unveiled a proposed national ban on all abortions after 15 weeks. NPR reported Graham's move was an attempt to force Republicans to adopt a party-wide consensus on the issue. Democrats nationwide have sought to make abortion rights a catalyst for their success in this year's elections. That's in the wake of the U.S. Supreme Court overturning guaranteed abortion rights this summer. Graham reportedly acknowledged his proposal has little chance of becoming law in the near future. Democrats currently control Congress and will control the White House through at least 2024. The South Carolina Republican previously said abortion should be left to the states. Is this proposed national abortion ban a problem for Indiana U.S. Senator Todd Young? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Chris Mitchum. John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Whitney Downard, senior reporter for the Indiana Capital Chronicle. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. Chris Mitchum, Todd Young wants the spotlight of this election, as many Republicans do, on inflation and the economy, as that's clearly a problem for President Biden and Democrats. Is Lindsey Graham hurting those efforts?
I think so a little bit, just because his actions are going to have to require Senator Young to have to answer questions about it, have it be brought back up in a conversation. And we've seen around the country that this abortion issue has certainly slowed momentum for Republicans. I don't think they would absolutely have dashed it. I think it's, according to most accounts, we're still projected to take the Senate, but maybe that dream of taking the House might be a little harmed by this recent development. But I just don't understand really what the reasoning was for Senator Graham there. I mean, I think if Senator Young were to come out and say, hey, I think we should leave this to the state, he wouldn't be the only Republican saying that. Mitch McConnell came out and said, you know, we love Senator Graham, but we're thinking kind of like what the Supreme Court said, we should probably leave this to the states. And I just don't understand why we would try to get away from this talking point of inflation. You know, you had the recent the Bureau of Workforce come out with a less than spectacular inflation report that showed while gas prices are going down, food prices, medical prices continue to go up. And I think that's really what Republicans should continue to be focusing on.
Yeah, I mean, if Todd Young said, like many Republicans have, abortion should be left to the states, he'd be joining Lindsey Graham, who said that before this week. How much does this impact Indiana's Senate race?
Oh, I think it has an impact because he's going to be required to say whether he supports a national ban on abortion or whether he supports Senate Bill 1 or Senate Enrolled Act 1 in Indiana. I mean, it's clear that the Republican Party has stationed themselves behind abortion bans in however many levels you want to look at it. They're for restricting and, in some cases, absolutely banning abortion. And that's in sharp contrast with Tom McDermott, his opponent, who is pro-choice. So he's going to have to answer those questions whether he likes it or not. And he's going to have to answer them because the voters of Indiana don't like the Republican position on this as enacted by the state. It's clear that they don't like it. And people think abortion ought to be available. You know, my own husband was talking about making a proposal of 15 weeks for everyone. But the restrictions that have been put in by Indiana are unrealistic, and there are many in the Republican Party who would have required that 10-year-old to carry that child of a rapist to term and then have a C-section. I'd like to know where Todd Young stands on that.
And this becomes, it's no longer something you can dismiss as a hypothetical. That's what Lindsey Graham's proposal does, too, is, you know, before you could say, Todd Young could easily just say, well, that's an Indiana legislative issue. I'll leave it to Indiana legislators. But now this is, you have to, you know, there's no longer a hypothetical. But Republicans have run on abortion for a long time in states like Indiana and had a lot of success on it. Does, you know, Lindsey Graham's part of his reasoning was we need to stake out a party-wide consensus on this issue. Is something like that really possible with where we are now with the abortion debate?
I'm not sure it is. I just saw a poll from the 19th recently where it said that 70% of Americans, Republicans and Democrats alike, just don't trust politicians to make abortion policy anymore. So I'm not sure that this is going to be a win for either party when people just don't trust the policies that they're passing to be healthcare focused and actually effective. So I don't really see this going well for Graham and other Republicans who are supporting this.
And you know, we saw at the debate at the Indiana State House, Republicans aren't of one belief on the abortion issue at this point. I mean, I think there's a lot of people in the Indiana legislature who would have a real problem with Lindsey Graham's bill.
Oh, sure, sure. And this is such a volatile issue right now. That's why you're seeing Republican nominees around the country amending very quietly but very effectively their websites and their literature.
I'm not sure how effective it is.
Well, it's effective in the sense that it's gone.
It's sneaky.
They before might have been very adamant about their pro-life credentials, and now it's much more middle of the road. And you could say, well, that's what happens after primaries. You tack to the middle. And that's true. But this is unusual in terms of its, I mean, if this in sailing terms, I think the boat might, you know, we'd probably be tipping over at this point in terms of that course correction. So it's, I think the issue here for a lot of Republicans is simply timing. Maybe there would have been an opportunity, and I'm sure it was poll tested. I'm sure that Lindsey Graham didn't just go out and say, hey, let's throw out this number. But what he probably forgot to ask on the poll or his people was, you know, when's the ideal time to bring this up? Because right now is not, politically speaking, the right time to bring this up. Why relitigate an issue that clearly is dangerous, seemingly, to a lot of Republican nominees who are going to be on, you know, vying for and election here in a six, what is it,
gives
6 weeks
more, or 2 months? It gives more fodder because you could make a case that this is a window to the Republican Party's soul. If they get control of Congress, this is what they want to do. And he made the mistake of putting it out beforehand because you don't want the voters to know what you're going to do after you're elected. But that is a window to their soul.
Yeah, and obviously Senator Graham didn't run it by Mitch McConnell in all likelihood just because his statement when he came out, he was just, I think he kind of read the writing on the wall that said maybe this isn't the best time to do that.
That seems to be the common thing now in the Republican caucus in the Senate. Yeah. Nobody seems to be Rick Scott, Mitch McConnell. Yeah. It seems like there's a lot of ill will right now.
And to your point in Indiana about it being a red, you know, seemingly pro-life state, and we have trouble agreeing here, imagine on a nationwide level in Congress. That'd be different.
Republican Secretary of State candidate Diego Morales is resisting calls to participate in a debate. Morales' campaign says his focus is on traveling all 92 counties. They point to interviews he's done and note there are no congressional debates in Indiana this year, nor in other statewide races for state auditor and treasurer. Libertarian Secretary of State candidate Jeff Moore says Morales is hiding.
Your ideas are so bad that you can't even stand in front of a group of of people, of your neighbors, to defend them, then something's wrong. You need better ideas.
Democratic candidate Destiny Wells says voters care about debates.
It is a chance for the voter to easily access information in direct contrast to each other instead of having to go root through the news and find each of our different policy positions through interviews.
Wells and Moore may participate in a debate next month without Morales. And Delaney, does a debate really matter in a Secretary of State's race?
Well, I think a debate matters in this Secretary of State's race because, you know, there are so many questions about the allegations or the positions that Morales has taken. He's obviously afraid of Destiny Wells. That's clear. He doesn't want to appear next to her and say how he was for restricting access to early voting early, and now he's in favor of it, and how he said that Donald Trump should be the president, and now he's recognizing that maybe Joe Biden won, and all of these positions where he's clearly flip-flopped and can't be trusted, and even to the question of whether or not he's a veteran. I mean, he was in the National Guard for a shortened period of time. Looks like he got an honorable discharge. But why not the 8 years everybody else serves? Kind of had me wondering. Why doesn't he have a press conference and show his entire record? And, you know, he didn't serve abroad, as far as I know. And so I'm not sure that he's supposed to be wearing that veteran's hat. Those like Destiny Wells, who actually fought for this country, were actually in abroad in the interests of this country, might take exception to him claiming to be a veteran when he probably, if, you know, my experience looking at what the military does is they don't want you. You can get an honorable discharge. Just go. And that's what this looks like.
What is the benefit to Diego Morales just saying no to all of these things? Saying, no, I'm not going
to. He doesn't have to answer those questions.
Well, but I mean, you know.
Yeah. I was about to say, because I think Ann's absolutely right. If any debate in this race would all be all about Diego's record in all likelihood, I mean, you don't see the same amount of election security concerns, although there might be some kind of, you know, hidden deeper in our systems. But you don't see the same amount of election security concerns in Indiana than you do other states that were on a national scale. So I don't think, you know, a Secretary of State race debate at this point would be really talking about, you know, the dealer relationship or the election security and things. It would just be all about Diego's record. It would give the other two a perfect opportunity to question him, probably rightfully so, about a lot of his background. So I absolutely understand why he is refusing to do this, because I just don't think there's any benefit there.
Well, I mean, it's a Secretary of State's race. It is absolutely getting more attention than they usually do in Indiana and across the country in elections this year, going because of 2020. But is the average voter going to care whether or not Diego Morales participated in a debate? Are they even going to know that he refused?
Probably not. Many voters will not know that he refused, but they should. I mean, voters, and I fault voters to a large extent about, you get what you don't do your homework, guess what? You get the results. And I'm not saying one way or the other, but you should do your homework so you know what you're voting for. And this trend that I've seen where candidates, and it's not just this year, this has gone on for a decade or more, you know, candidate questionnaires, heaven forbid we fill out any, you know, League of Women Voters or any other kind of questionnaire that seeks to help. I'm not talking about somebody trying to.
Base.
Even then, you know, there's just this sort of policy, like, you know, there's such a reluctance. And then the same thing with debates. You know, the notion that if we don't control the message, and I miss the days when the hurly-burly of political campaigning, which was that you go out and you actually subject yourself to, you know, the occasional catcall or tough question from reporters or voters. It's not just
public
the
scrutiny.
The state public mm-hmm. scrutiny. That's the crucible in which good government, it seems to me, is formed. There are two things that go in Morales' favor, though, and I'll get back to my. There are smart voters. Don't get me wrong. Everybody watching this show and listening to this show, I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the people who don't listen and watch this show. A lot of Hoosiers don't do their homework, and so he benefits from the fact that he's a Republican, and a lot of people are just going to vote straight line because it is a Republican
unless
state.
Unless he gets known.
What hurts him, though, because there are pockets of Indiana where a non-Anglo-Saxon sounding name like Morales, believe it or not, this I know this is 2022, but that will hurt him among
his core voters.
Among individuals who don't take the time to understand
voters,
what's going on. I've seen it time and time again in Indiana.
The same people that put him in, though.
That's
well,
true.
That's true. Just a Republican. That's just
the base
Republican
of the base.
Hierarchy.
That's the base of the base. That's true. Yeah. What we can tell about Diego's strategy is he seems to go to a lot of Republican Party events all across the state. He marches in parades all across the state. I can't tell if he's doing much more than that. He doesn't do a ton of interviews. Is that going to be a winning strategy?
I think, unfortunately, it might be just because he is connecting one-on-one with those hyper-Republican active party members. And the outside voters who aren't paying attention just don't know. I tried looking for recent in-depth interviews with Morales. I couldn't find anything other than canned statements like he's given my publication. And one of the other things I noticed is that he just never seemed to appear in a place where someone could ask him a tough question. And he has not done well responding to tough questions that I've tried to send him. So I think that it's a bit of an advantage for him to avoid all that, but that only works when their voters are disconnected.
Yeah. And we'll see whether they are, particularly on the abortion issue, because he's opined on that issue as well. And you can say he's a Republican, he's for an abortion ban. So what if it doesn't have anything to do with Secretary of State?
I was just
nobody
say,
knows
doesn't,
that.
Doesn't
nobody knows that.
Yeah.
And how
but,
many times we've run candidates on the Secretary of State race
that was
that had
successful
nothing
at the
to
convention,
do with it?
Though you saw a lot of people, you know, I'm running for Secretary of State and I'm against abortion, and that got a lot of votes.
But again,
in your convention,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Again, it's a subset of a subset. Yeah. Yeah.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question, and this week's question: do you care if the candidates for Secretary of State have a debate, A, yes, or B, no. Last week, we asked you whether Indiana should tax student loan debt forgiveness as income, as it currently does. 25% say yes, 75% say no, many of them perhaps student loan holders. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, another state lawmaker has been linked to the anti-government extremist group, the Oath Keepers, Republican Representative Chris Judy. Judy says he hasn't been affiliated with them for years. Data from the Oath Keepers website was leaked last year. The Anti-Defamation League has been analyzing that data since, and an Indy Star report this week says Fort Wayne Republican Chris Judy's name was affiliated with the militia group. Members of the Oath Keepers were part of the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. The Anti-Defamation League notes that just because someone was part of the leaked database doesn't mean they actively participated in the group or even understand what it is. In a statement, Judy said, quote, "I stand by the oath of office I took when I entered the state legislature and the oath I took before I deployed to defend my country in Iraq. I will always stand by the rule of law. I have not been affiliated with the group for 7 years." Whitney Downard, what does that statement mean?
That's a great question, Brandon. All I can tell is that he apparently was part of it before 7 years ago. So I tried looking 7 years ago to see if there were any events that might have sparked it. About 7-8 years ago, the Oath Keepers were in Ferguson, Missouri. Before that, they were at the standoff at the Bundy Ranch. So they seemed pretty extremist back then. It's not like they were suddenly extreme, you know, last year. He didn't provide us any information of how long he was with them, what made him leave.
What made him join?
Unlike Senator Scott Baldwin, who told us, hey, I gave them $30 because I had no idea who they were. And I was trying to run for Hamilton County Sheriff. So it made me have more questions than I had before.
This is now two. Scott Baldwin seemed to have at least an understandable explanation for why his name. And as the piece pointed out, the Anti-Defamation League says, your name appears here doesn't mean you even know what this group is, doesn't say how long you've been with it, or whether you're an active member. Scott Baldwin had an explanation. Chris Judy didn't seem to have much of one. Is that going to ultimately lead to anything?
Well, I'm like a broken record in this regard. The impact, again, negative impact, only is significant to the extent that an opponent wishes to make it significant.
Because we have an opponent.
And so, you know, these issues, it seems to me, vary by district. Some districts, that may be worth a few extra points, you know. Other districts, it would be harmful, let's say. It's the tree falling in the forest. If nobody's, I mean, we're talking about it now, but, you know, memories, other things come up. Yeah, will it come up? If somebody sounded that drumbeat day after day, maybe it would make inroads. But, I mean, there would have been an opportunity to say, you know, clearly seeing that many of the leadership of this organization are facing, you know,
federal charges, felony charges,
and so forth, there are some bad things that go on here that even if I had some affiliation prior to 7 years ago that I don't agree with, but instead, it's almost as if I was waiting for the next line to be, there are good people, you know, on both sides. It's that sort of thing, there's an opportunity to disavow or to go further than disavow, to criticize or condemn, and the bait was not taken.
Does Chris Judy owe his constituents and Hoosiers more of an explanation than what he's giving so far?
I think it would be a good idea. Maybe just a simple statement of, because you obviously you know the Oath Keepers' reputation now. I didn't know, obviously, they're the same organization that they were 7 years ago, but what was the status? What was their main talking point 7 years ago? I don't know. And I didn't even know who Chris Judy was 7 years ago, but the 2-3 years that I've worked with him, obviously I've seen nothing but a respectful person that vigorously fights for his constituents, and obviously he loves his country, former Iraq veteran, so regarding the person, the way I know him, I wouldn't think of this as a huge deal, but obviously you don't know the deep intentions of certain people.
Yeah, I mean, if you would ask me, okay, somebody in the House Republican Caucus was a member of the Oath Keepers 7 years ago, I don't know that Chris Judy would have been the first, 10th, 15th, 20th, 30th person that would have come to mind.
You would have thought there could have been 30 people in the House.
No, my point is, he's not somebody who constantly gets to the mic and rails against the federal government or anything else like that. Does he owe more of an explanation than he's giving so far?
I think he does, because, you know, all he would have to do, he might not even need to give an explanation of what he was doing there 7 years ago, just repudiate it. Just repudiate them. Say, I am not in favor of an organization that does the kinds of things they did on January 6th, period. Okay.
Well, he said, I stand by the rule of law. Well, clearly, a lot
great.
Of oath keepers at this point don't.
Well, that's great. That's not a complete repudiation. The problem with this is the same problem with gerrymandering. He doesn't have an opponent because that district cannot be won by a Democrat. Doesn't matter how good the Democrat is. Doesn't matter how bad
okay,
he is.
Okay, in that part of the state, is there any district you could draw
I don't know.
That Chris
I,
Judy would
I don't know, but you could at least make them more competitive. I mean, we have the same problem in Marion County. We have overwhelmingly Democratic districts in Marion County, and that shouldn't be either. There should be more competitive districts, because that's the kind of thing that makes for good democracy. And then if you have somebody who is has an affiliation with a group like the Oath Keepers and isn't willing to repudiate them, you can throw them out. He can't be thrown out under the current gerrymandering district.
Members of the Biden administration joined Governor Eric Holcomb and Senator Todd Young at Purdue University this week to tout the investments of the CHIPS Act. The CHIPS Act, passed through Congress in July, puts more than $50 billion towards bolstering the semiconductor industry in the United States. Semiconductor chips are used in numerous electronic devices, including phones, TVs, and even cars. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says supply chain issues during the pandemic made it clear that the U.S. needed to secure the production of chips.
Yes, we're in a competition with China, and our ability in that competition to offer the best choice, the best alternative, is what ultimately is going to carry the day.
Governor Holcomb says in 5 to 10 years, the idea of a Silicon Heartland manufacturing hub in the Midwest is not a stretch.
To be able to play a part in turning a supply chain pain into a supply chain gain, this is an enormous source of pride as well.
Earlier this year, SkyWater Technology announced a $1.8 billion semiconductor plant in West Lafayette. Funding for the plant will come from the CHIPS Act. John Schwann, has Todd Young voted for the CHIPS Act, putting him at odds with some fellow Republicans, including fellow Hoosier Senator Mike Braun. Is this event a political boost for him or potentially something that could harm him politically?
For Todd Young, we're talking
about. For Todd Young.
I think it's a win. Yeah, there are people who will criticize it, but my goodness, if you frame this, which I think is the logical framing, which is this will create lots and lots of jobs. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Jobs that aren't likely to disappear in 5 years.
No.
These are significant.
Yeah, $100,000 kind of jobs. These are six-figure jobs. And then you think about, you know, just the cottage industry. As we've seen in automotive industry, you have the big names, the Toyotas, the Hondas. But then think of all the other businesses that want to be in close proximity. So that'll be a boon. And then you think about the other aspect of this, which is making sure that the United States isn't held hostage, as we've seen when we depend so heavily on other nations, including nations that don't like us and seem to be increasingly hostile toward us, China being an example. The same lawmakers who last session were arguing about having a registry to make sure that we knew when Chinese interests were buying farmland, now seemingly, you know, think that it's all right to be beholden to their manufacturing supply chain in terms of something that's arguably extremely important to our nation's future in terms of technology and the availability of American-made chips. So it's a winner short-term and long-term, and certainly a bigger winner long-term.
Assuming he had had a primary opponent, which he did not, but appearing at an event with high-ranking Biden administration officials of another party's administration, is that something you do before a general election and maybe not before a primary election?
Absolutely, because I think obviously we all know in primary season you try to be, you know, maybe as Republican or as Democrat as you can, and maybe not the image of you standing next to, was it two Biden officials, I think?
Yeah. Including the Secretary of State.
Right. Like,
this
Secretary
is not
State,
somebody that
Secretary
nobody...
Secretary of Commerce.
Exactly.
Right. So maybe that wouldn't be the best image, but for the general election, I think it's an absolute win, just because I think Tom McDermott has been trying his best to paint Todd Young as a far-right guy who's, you know, big on the social issues and big on the culture war and things like that, but whenever people see that it's not a social issue and he's actually doing things to support Indiana and work with the other side of the aisle, I think it's a big win for the general.
Is this a big boost for Todd Young?
Oh, I think it is. I also find it, but one he earned.
He voted for the bill.
He voted for the bill, and he was a co-sponsor of the bill, if I recall correctly.
Right.
So I mean, he did what he should do for the benefit of Indiana. I agree. I just think it's ironic that he and Governor Holcomb are spending all their time saying that Joe Biden's administration is doing a terrible job on the economy. But you get a photo op. There he is.
Lastly on the show, I want to give a special shout out to a guy that you don't know maybe, but is responsible for the way the show looks and sounds every week, which is my longtime producer, Mike Perry. Mike and I have been working together to put this show on the air just about every week since I took over nearly 6 years ago. And unfortunately, Mike has got himself a nice new job, which means he's no longer going to be working here with us at Indiana Week in Review. Mike, we're going to miss you, and we wish you the best, and we're sad to see you go. And that is Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Chris Mitchum, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Whitney Downard of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.